And so back to joy, the emotion. It's mediated in a way by dopamine, a secretion that makes you feel good and want to repeat certain actions, like having sex. Professor John Reynolds studies dopamine at the University of Otago in New Zealand and has been finding out some surprising effects.
So dopamine is a brain chemical, a neurotransmitter, which is formed in a part of the brain stem in the base of the brain, and it's kind of squirted into target areas. And the way we have worked out what dopamine does is by really seeing people who don't have it, like in Parkinson's disease. Parkinson's disease is manifest by people who have a deficiency in movement, really. And for the longest time, it's been thought that dopamine is mostly involved in enabling us to move. But when people started to look at actually what dopamine cells do, what makes them fire and makes them tick, it really has no relation at all to movement. In fact, it's released when we experience rewarding stimuli. It's something you can measure in a functional scanner. And people who are recounting stories of love, you can see the dopamine cells are activating. People playing video games and scanners also have a release of dopamine. So it really is a rewarding neurotransmitter that motivates us and keeps us doing things.
How does it know how to discriminate? In other words, does it say this should be rewarded and this shouldn't?
That's a real area of controversy, because many people believe that dopamine responds to a prediction, our ability to predict whether something is going to have good consequences or not. Of course, the dopamine cells themselves are sitting there listening to their inputs, and really it's areas in the cortex, the covering of the brain, that kind of decides on experience, whether something that we see in a specific place in a specific time is going to be rewarding, and then drives the dopamine cells to make the dopamine release. We've done some work, though, looking at how inputs that don't go anywhere near the cortex, so things that aren't aware of cognitive things that are going on around us, can actually directly drive the dopamine cells. So, for example, if I walk in the room and a light flash comes on, there will be a flash of dopamine. It's something that's quick, that's unexpected, and that will directly drive, through inputs from the eye directly into the brainstem, will directly drive dopamine to try and alert us to something that's happened. So after a while, if that light keeps going and it means nothing, the dopamine cells will stop firing because they've habituated and no longer thought of as important. We're very interested in the conditions that make dopamine cells activate. We're interested in those short, quick activations that occur that don't require us to know much about what the thing is that's flashed. And we're actually interested really in what is happening at those target areas where dopamine is released. What does it do when it's released? And our research has really gone down right down to the single synapse level. We've actually recorded from single synapses inside whole brains and found that if you get the timing right, if the dopamine is released at the right timing in relation to you doing something, it will reinforce synapses. So the example I always give is if we all know how to train our dogs and our children, some of us have, and we get them to do something and then we reward them with a pat on the head or some food or a big hug for a child. And that hug, that reward releases dopamine. And what it does is it somehow works immediately before to activate and strengthen those synapses leading to the thing that the person or the animal has just done.
Do you have anything to do with the non-appearance of dopamine? You mentioned before that Parkinson's disease might be not directly involved, but these people, for instance, find it very difficult to walk through a door. And, of course, famously, my namesake in Awakenings, the film, these people who'd been kind of asleep for decades, who woke up because they were given dopamine. Do you have anything to do with those sort of non-appearances?
Yes, it's very interesting to know what no dopamine means. And we've done some work where we've depleted dopamine and see what it does to synapses in the brain, and it tends to do the reverse, it tends to weaken them. So I think there is a critical level of dopamine that goes up in pleasure to reinforce and goes down when we want to, what we call, extinguish something that we no longer wish to do again. So something that might lead to negative outcomes will certainly lead to a reduction in dopamine and weaken that association. And you can imagine somebody with Parkinson's who doesn't have dopamine on board tends to have a paucity of movement, really hard to get motivated. And you could think about that as a state of no dopamine. So clinicians treat Parkinson's disease by giving a drug called L-DOPA, which you saw in the Awakenings story, woke people up. So basically it's a wonder drug, because it gets into the existing dopamine nerve terminals and allows dopamine to be released in its natural timing. And that's very good. And people who are on Parkinson's who start using L-DOPA often think they're cured because they can now do all the things they couldn't do before. But unfortunately, in many cases of people who have Parkinson's disease, it's progressive. The little nerve terminal machines that make dopamine out of L-DOPA are continuing to die. And as they continue to die, some abnormal patterns start happening. So what happens, we believe, is that the levodopa gets into other neurons that also make dopamine, like serotonin neurons, but they aren't humming at the same tune. They haven't got the same timing, and they tend to release dopamine aberrantly, which is, we think, is one reason that you see abnormal movements that occur with people who have been treated for some time. And you saw that evidence very well in the Oliver Sacks film, the Awakenings film. You saw the main character with all his abnormal movements towards the end.
And so the treatment is more of a delaying factor rather than a cure?
Yes, a lot of research is being done, but we don't have really those clues as to how to stop these dopamine cells from dying. If we have that, we could arrest it in time, we could treat the symptoms and keep the person going indefinitely, but we don't really know what's causing it. So really it's like the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff. We're giving the drug to try and enable people to keep moving.
How will your research down at the synaptical level help?
So what it's given us is some major clues about timing and timing of dopamine release and how one might wish to replace dopamine in a physiological manner. And we're actually working on a drug delivery system specially that will enable us, we hope, to be able to release dopamine in a very temporally or timing-specific way that we think could stave off and delay, and hopefully indefinitely, these abnormal movements. Very early stage of development, but the reason, by recording from single synapses, we can test this and see whether this is replicating what should be happening normally.
How do you get into tiny synapses?
We're basically using a measurement technique that allows us to see the effect of the strengthening of the synapses. So we can put a little tiny electrical stimulator, that sort of things that are used in humans for deep brain stimulation for people with Parkinson's. The brain is anesthetic. People can walk around quite happy without knowing they have this thing on and implanted in their brain. And we can stimulate them. We can measure by recording in the cell that receives the synapse the strength of those inputs. And we can see by activating those and then dropping dopamine at the right timing whether we can strengthen or weaken those.
As you mentioned, deep brain stimulation, what's the story on that so far? Some people talk about amazing success and others are slightly reserved.
Yes, I have some friends who are neurosurgeons, and I think it's a pretty, you're right, it's a pretty mixed bag. Basically, I think it's been the only major magic bullet treatment we've had for PD in probably the last 15 years. But it does have its limitations, and we really don't have the long-term history yet to say for how long it's going to last. But certainly the neat thing about it is it does allow us to reduce the dose of L-DOPA, so it reduces the side effects. For some people it works very well for the inability to move very fast, their bradykinesia, slow movements. By using deep brain stimulation, that can speed them up. It's also particularly neurosurgeon dependent, how they use it, what parameters they use. I personally, if I can put my head on the line, say I don't see a long-term remedy in it. I think the neurosurgeon and the patient have to chase the parameters for years and years to make sure that it stays well. I think we still need something in addition to that.
So not too many magic bullets in the long run, as you know, according to John Reynolds in Dunedin. He's at the University of Otago there. A reminder that All in the Mind, presented by Lynn Malcolm, is about using big data to track the public mood and numbers of people with certain mental attitudes. All in the Mind is on Sundays at 5 p.m. and 1 p.m. on Mondays, before the Science Show, in fact. Next week, at this time, I'll meet the dinosaurs of Western Australia roaring away in Perth and hear about cooling patients who've just had a stroke. Production by David Fisher and Charlie McCune. I'm Robin Williams.